On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR, Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons today with us, I'm thrilled and delighted to have Representative Julio Robina from South Miami in Florida. And one of the quotes of his that I like and I'm going to start the show off with is, we need laws with teeth to protect unit owners. There are many, many things that need to be addressed. The laws are not fine. Thank you so much for joining us today, Representative Robina.
Thank you, Sue, and it's a real pleasure to be able to speak to you and to everyone listening so that we can tell them a little bit about what we're trying to do here in the state of Florida when it comes to condominium and homeowner associations. And I tell you what, I'd like to begin probably with letting everybody know what we're doing here in the state of Florida because of the problems that are occurring in these associations. And the first step that we've taken this year, the Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives has appointed a committee. And the committee's called the Select Committee on Condominium and Homeowner Governance for the state of Florida. And what we have been really commissioned to do is to go out and travel throughout the state of Florida, having public hearings in different forums all around the state of Florida, and listening to people that are living in these associations and basically having to sit and listen to the horror stories, as I say, that are occurring in these associations. Our job is not only to hear the problems, also, it's also to listen to any type of solutions. But more importantly, when we're done with hearing it all out, we've been commissioned to go back to Tallahassee, as we say, Capitol Hill, to sit down and try to craft new laws that will, at the end of the day, protect the unit owners, the property owners in these associations.
Tell me something. Why now? Why start it? What happened to point to the need for something like this?
I guess the answer to that is why now? Because I think that we have a group of committed people. When should it have been addressed? Many, many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's been happening
for
years and years. And what's happening, and I like to really, you know, tell people exactly the truth about why it probably wasn't addressed, is because I call this the hot potato and the opening of the Pandora's box. It's been something that states really don't like to get into the private sector because all it really does, it creates more laws, which, again, means really a loss to freedom for the people in the associations to be able to govern themselves. But due to, we'll call it the bad apples in these particular associations, here comes government again having to look at this and possibly put down, you know, different types of statutes to govern these associations so that they can live in harmony, and more importantly, there'll be accountability, which is the big word that we're using during this process for those people that live in the associations. We, as representatives for, you know, different districts throughout the state of Florida, have been receiving complaints for years. We've been getting complaints from the homeowners, complaining about special assessments, problems with the elections, no proof of payment being, you know, paid out properly, no receipts as far as the work being done. You name it, they've complained about the different problems that occur in these associations. And, frankly, politicians never wanted to touch this with a 10-foot pole because you have a lot of vested interests in here. You have the developers. You have the mortgage brokers that deal with closings in these units. You have realtors Then you have the attorneys that represent the associations that make a lot of money from representing the associations. You got the property management companies. You've got the CAMs, which are the professional managers. And then at the bottom, and I've noticed how I say at the bottom of the whole thing, is the poor unit owner, and he probably has the smallest voice in this whole process. For reasons like that, it became very political, and for years, nobody has wanted to touch it. Now, as we go on, I will let you know that why is it a priority? Because myself and a number of other representatives from more down in the South Florida area, meaning Palm Beach, Broward County, down in South Florida and Miami-Dade, really brought this to the forefront by asking the Speaker of the House to create this committee to start investigating these claims. And here's the clincher. The biggest reason for it, Stu, is that bottom line, Stu, in the year 2010, 40% of the population in the state of Florida will live in a condominium or homeowner association environment.
Why is that?
That's incredible.
Why is that? Why will 40% of all residents in Florida have to live in an association?
They won't have to, but the development that's taking place in the state of Florida between the waterfront development where they're taking one-story and two-story existing older structures and leveling them and seeing that they're building nothing but these high-rise condominiums, that is the fate of at least our coastal areas and also in the infill areas, meaning in areas where there's a lot of density, more in the center of the more metropolitan areas in the state of Florida. That's the trend. And then there's this trend in South Florida and actually all over the state of Florida, because I'm talking to you right now from Tallahassee, Florida, up in the Panhandle. The next thing's happening is these what they call walled-in communities, and I'm sure we've all witnessed them. Those are the gated communities that
that's right.
In, and they, fortunately or unfortunately for others, they come with homeowner associations which have very little to no laws at all governing them, and that's where the problems begin.
Do you know that a lot of local municipal governments mandate these things?
Absolutely.
And so, therefore, there is a whole lot of government involvement from the get-go.
The difference is the following, though. The local ordinances and the local municipalities, they have a hard time with enforcement issues in general. And basically, when it comes to, you know, the actual governing and overlooking of condominium and homeowner associations, that responsibility falls in the hands of the state of Florida. For instance, in the state of Florida, every condominium unit owner pays $4 a year that goes into a fund that is given to the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, which is what you would say the branch or the agency at the state level that oversees the condominiums and the homeowner associations with the laws that are currently in place. And I've told many people this many, many times. The current laws that we have in the state of Florida are more of an educational and informational type law, not really a type of law that is really geared to protect the unit owners per se and create accountability, more importantly, creating penalties, and at the end of the day, having the opportunity for the state of Florida to enforce the laws, that are currently in place, because again, they're really not laws with teeth. I'll go back to repeating myself again. More of an educational and informational laws. We have been trying to allow these condominiums and homeowner associations to govern themselves accordingly by their own bylaws, which a lot of times are the biggest problems.
Well, I got a call from somebody in Florida. Actually, he was a city employee. And I can't remember. It was a small town that I didn't, that's not on the tip of my tongue right now. And this was a couple of years ago, and he wanted me to give him advice and tips on how to force the existing associations into rejuvenating themselves. He said that a number of them were defunct, and he said that a lot of them, I asked him to describe them. He said, oh, they range in size from 40 to approximately 100. units, and I said, and what amenities do they have? Well, there's a retention pond, and the problem is that they're not maintaining the retention pond according to our standards. And I said, all right, so why don't you maintain the retention pond? He says, oh, because we can't afford it. I said, why don't you charge them a fee and you take over and maintain it according to your own standards? He says, no, 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 we want the associations.
And there's where they go back to a catch-22 situation for themselves. But let me just let everyone know that's listening that the power of removing people, and I do mean removing, that going in, and if you don't like the current board members and so forth, those powers fall within each association. In every set of bylaws, there should be a section in there that states that you have the total right to recall your whole board if you're not happy with them. And that is something that really we encourage, you know, the associations to do before they involve the state and file complaints with the state and so forth. Because a lot of times in a situation like that, the state would just basically go back and say, look at your bylaws. This is what you need to do. Go ahead and take these actions, have the recall, and go ahead and have a new election. But every association has the rights to be able to do that. A lot of times, let me tell you what happens if, and here's the catch-22 that a lot of these unit owners are. Let's say something has been done incorrectly. Let's say that the elections aren't being done properly. Let's say they want to get rid of a group of people. And let's say things are being done in a very shady manner. A lot of times then they have no other recourse but to call the state of Florida, they call the Department of Business and Professional Regulations. They'll look into these allegations. And one of the scenarios that happens if there's any kind of problems or accountability problems or whatever it may be, the state could fine these associations.
Oh.
But here's the thing. Here's the catch-22 that I'm talking about. As unit owners, you know that everybody pays a fee.
That's right.
Maintenance fees.
So
a portion of that maintenance fee goes to use for law firms or for attorneys to be hired.
That's right.
If you file a complaint. So if you file a complaint, you're spending your own money to have to defend your own complaint, and God forbid the state fine you for anything.
You pay it.
That money is your money and your other neighbors' monies. And I don't need to tell you what happens after that. The word gets out that this gentleman or this woman complained. Now all of a sudden there's a fine levied, and there may have to be a special assessment to pay for the fine. I would not want to be that person living in that association
find
out that that happened.
But what you're describing is totally untenable. It's just not a workable solution.
Absolutely. And this is why when you hear people say that there's nothing wrong with the laws, that things are fine, that it's just a couple of bad areas. I will tell you that I don't buy that for 1 minute. I've got to say one thing, though. I have witnessed and have seen some associations that are running like models. So I don't want to generalize saying that all of them are bad, because that's the first thing we ever get complaints
about. But they're one election away from turning.
You got it. That's absolutely correct. And unfortunately, the percentages are that there's more associations having problems and there are those that are working smoothly.
And that
is why here is government again looking at the particular situation.
Well, you know, government's got these chains on it. You can't do a whole lot of things without protecting the rights of the innocent. All of that's been taken away in an association. Those protections no longer exist.
That's correct.
And that's a hard thing. That's a really tough thing to deal with.
Well, I've tried to describe it in this fashion. I think that, again, when these laws were written, and again, they're very good laws in place, but a lot of them are antiquated. A lot of them are not, are the type of laws, again, that I tell you that really don't have any teeth, and goes back to my repetitive comment. They're more educational, informational. What I'd like to see is laws that, again, allow the bylaws to be administered, but if they're not, and there is no accountability, that the state could come in and audit them, similar to what we do when the state finds out that there is Medicaid fraud, for instance. Somebody calls the state and says there's Medicaid fraud going on. Years and years and years ago, the state never really looked into it, and there was all kinds of problems going in. the actual department that handles those investigations got beefed up. Investigators were brought on board. People were then sent out. And I tell you what, the fraudulent situation and all the problems probably cut down by probably 50%. And this is some of the things that we have to put in place. The other thing is penalties. Let me give you another case scenario. A lot of times, let's say that you are having a problem with your association. Well, as I said, you currently pay for whatever law firm or attorneys will be hired by that association if you've got an outstanding complaint against them. But if they turn around, and let's say they're coming after you for whatever situation you may have, you have to go out and hire legal counsel to defend you. So you're paying for one attorney on one end to defend you. At the same time, your money has gone into hiring the attorney mm-hmm. or the association that's coming after you. Here's the sad part about it. A lot of the times, these things end up in a civil court. And since there's really no laws, judges don't really want to touch this. So what they do is they turn around and tell you to call the Department of Business and Professional Regulations. You talk to them. They really don't have anything that governs it because, again, going back to their laws are more along the lines of educational, informational, and then they tell you they need to go back and deal with your association and the bylaws. So you get caught, Shu, in this vicious circle going round and round and round, which is costing you money, and you're not really getting anything conclusive to solve your problems. So what we want to do, again, is create the issue of accountability that if, you know, you haven't done A, B, and C within your association, or if it was, you know, done with other intent, with maybe even a criminal intent or whatever it may be, then the state can come in, investigate it, and not only levy fines, but we'd like to see, you know, if somebody is blatantly stealing, like I'm going to give you a couple scenarios down in South Florida. We have apparently a number of associations where they have their normal monthly services like the maintenance of the grounds, the cleaning of windows, the repairing of the broken elevators, maintenance work, plumbers, electricians. And it turns out that a lot of these people have contracts with companies, and some of these people have come forward and have actually told us that in order for them to work there, they had to raise the voucher, or in other words, the receipts had to be jacked up, as we say, an extra $500 or $600. And this money is being shared, you know, among people right. on that are handling these right. type of situations, along with some of the property management companies. Well, when the people come forward and they want to see that there was three bids taken, or they want to see that they went with the lowest price and are asking for accountability, it's not there. There's no receipts. We have found ledgers where checks are written out to cash. We're looking at ledgers where checks have been made out to board members. We ask for receipts on why that somebody paid $1,000 to change out a couple of sprinkler heads when we called around and we found out that it's nothing more than a $100 or $200 mm-hmm. job.
Yeah.
Where's the accountability?
Yeah.
And I mean, I can go on and on. We can do a five-hour show because I have heard so much during these hearings. I thought I knew it all, but there are some very, very sly and very
oh, yeah.
innovative people out
oh, yeah.
there
oh, yeah.
finding out how to take people's money because
oh, yeah.
it is easy. They know that in the legal world, they really will get caught in a round-robin situation. And there's really no penalties that can go after these people in general, and that's what they're suffering from. Worst case scenario, at the end of the day, the unit owner always suffers because if the money runs short, they go to the old world-known famous special assessment, which comes out of the pockets of a lot of these people who have probably paid the unit off, you know, are retired folks
mm-hmm.
on set income, and now all of a sudden they're looking at having to come up with a couple $1,000s or more.
Well, you know, if you did that as a politician, you'd be really worried about whether or not you'd be reelected next time around. But there's no similar political ramifications for a board member to do it.
Sure, you just brought up an excellent point. Let me talk to you about that for
All
a
right.
second. Some of the things that we are speaking out in favor of as we go through these hearings, and we're getting pros and cons and comments about it, is the following. And I'm going to use your example. As elected officials, when we deal with other people's money, That's called having a fiduciary responsibility.
That's right.
And we're the ones that volunteered to run for office. Nobody told us to run for office.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, I knew that when I ran for office, I would have to do the following. They would do a criminal background check on me, a financial background check on me, and we do a thing called a financial disclosure,
mm-hmm.
which I know is very personal, but I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It basically discloses all my assets and my liabilities and my net worth from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem doing it because, again, I chose to run for office.
And
I have nothing to hide, and I want accountability, you know, when it comes to people looking into my matters. Here's what we've been proposing, and we've been getting a lot of resistance.
We've
been talking about these board members. First of all, we have people that are convicted felons serving on boards, which I have been told, and I'd have to look at every set of bylaws, but bylaws, from what I'm being told by attorneys that defend the associations, probably all bylaws should say that should not happen. But it is happening, and we have proof that they're sitting there. We have people handling people's money, going back to the fiduciary responsibility, which are in bankruptcy court themselves. They can't even handle their own accounts, and they're handling other people's money. And then we have people that are not working and are making a living that people are questioning, my God, where are these people making the money from that are on these boards? And goes back to the three things that we are considering doing for members or people that want to be on these boards. One is to have a criminal background check if you're a volunteer. We spoke about doing a credit background check. And we've talked about doing the third thing that politicians and elected officials do, which is doing that financial yearly disclosure. On the positive side, people that are for it are probably, I'd say, the majority of the people that have had problems and have had situations where money is missing and they feel they have no accountability. But on the other hand, we've had a lot of people come forward and say, well, if you do that to us, you will never get any volunteers. And remember, the majority of these boards are volunteers.
My question to them when they come up with this is, why would you want these people on the board? I mean, you know, the industry ought to be making sure that these kinds of people stay the hell away from boards and stop giving the entire concept such a dirty name.
Well, that's where we agree, and I agree with you that, you know, if you want to do things out of good faith and you want to come forward and you want to serve as a volunteer like I do, I think you should be held accountable, and there should be some ways where people can check into who is handling their money, who is making their decisions, because at the end of the day, you did elect these people just like you elect your local politicians and your state and your federal politicians.
That's questionable because there's a lot of election fraud in associations.
Do you know about that? Well, don't
you? Oh, yeah, I do know about that.
You probably heard comments.
Well, there's one association where the governing documents say that if you have a violation notice on file, that you are ineligible to vote. And so right before election time, the management company will go out and send out as many as 75%, or send out violation notices to 75% of the owners to make them ineligible.
That game is being played as we speak in Dade and Broward County in large numbers.
That's right.
Very large numbers. And I will tell you that the greatest thing happening for us as elected officials, which are going to make our life much easier in order to address this, that due to the media, due to people like yourself that are putting the information out, due to the committees like the ones we're on and the one that the governor has, the task force on homeowner associations, the public that has been very upset for years, instead of now just yelling and screaming about it, they're starting to really educate themselves on those bylaws, which they should do from the second they move in or decide that they want to buy in an association. And they're educating themselves to the point where I call them up-and-coming condo lawyers. These people are challenging the associations. They're challenging the firms, the law firms that are defending them. They're challenging the CAMs. They're challenging the property management companies. And to me, it's great. And that's another reason why the numbers of complaints are increasing year after year, because they're fed up, they're educating themselves, something that they used to put in the hands of their own neighbors and volunteers, but as we keep hearing, there's so many problems. They're going out and taking the matters into their own hand, and now realizing that now the state needs to kick in and do their part and try to help them by revamping the laws and creating, again, accountability and penalties to go after those who are breaking the laws.
With that, we're going to take a short break. Here's One Way Ticket to Hell. We'll be right back with Representative Hula Rabino.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today is the irrepressible Representative Julia Rabino from Florida. You've renewed some my faith and hope that something is going to be done. You sound like you've taken the bull by the horns.
I have, and I tell you, this is a pretty big bull that we've had to take by the horns.
And you're on the right of your life, right?
I am, and I'm going to hold on, and I'm sure I'm going to win this rodeo, as they say. This thing is not going to buck me, because there's just too many millions of people depending on our success here, and I'm thrilled about the team that I've got working with me.
On the Commons is here at your service. Anytime you want to come on and anytime you want to talk about anything,
I do appreciate it.
Just let me know. We'll help you get the word out. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Dream Team, but I quickly want to run through just a couple of quick questions that
sure.
We were sent. You know, I only have one phone line here and you're on it, so what I have people do is send me emails if they have any questions. One of the questions is, if my information is correct, Florida has a relatively new law that allows a court to fine an association that fails to respond to an HOA member's reasonable request for access to their HOA records. Is that true?
That's a very current new law. That is correct. But that's for the homeowner associations. That's very, very true.
Oh, that's just for HOAs?
Right.
Not for condos?
That I know of, I have not been really made privy to anything that goes with the condominiums. Because, as I said earlier, we are now actually starting to legislate more on when it comes to the homeowner associations. Because the condominium laws have been in effect for, I think they go back to the mid-70s, whereas, and I take it back, it was the early 70s, whereas homeowner associations have very little to no laws at all, and that was one of the new laws kicked in for the homeowner associations.
Have any associations been fined, do you know?
Absolutely, but, you know, if I told you the numbers, it would be scary. I've been told that if we've had, probably, let's say, 100, associations fined in the past 10 years, that would be a record. Nobody's ever been arrested for anything, and the fines have been very minimal. They've usually have happened as a result of somebody being very, very persistent and a lot of times incurring their own expenses with their own attorneys to lay out basically the whole scenario in front of the Department of Business and Professional Regulations, where, again, it's been a fiduciary problem, meaning a lack of accountabilities for dollars and cents.
I have a lady sitting in the studio with me right here who has spent $500,000 protecting her rights.
She spent $500,000?
She spent $500,000 and counting.
On
I mean,
a unit
I think
it's worth probably not even that much money.
Well, I don't know.
that's the sad part about it. And you know, I'd love to, people like her, we'd love to talk to personally for the simple reason that here's my battle sometimes with the attorneys that represent the associations. The legal fees are what really kill these unit owners. Legal fees, meaning even when a fine is levied, if the fine is levied and it's not paid, sometimes the attorney's fees can be more than the actual fine that's levied against the unit owner. And a lot of times unit owners are trying to do things, you know, in the proper manner. I've heard some great associations that instead of going after people the first time and hitting them with a particular fine, they give them a set of warnings and time to clear it up, whereas some other associations go right to fining these individuals, which carry those high costs of attorney's fees.
You know, one of the, I think one of the provisions in Representative Eddie Farnsworth's bill in Arizona that was killed by special interests was that attorneys could not get involved for a period of a year, because what ends up starting off as a few pennies, and I got one article here out of Florida where some lady, 77-year-old, came and testified that for 4 cents she ended up losing her house.
Because of the fees.
Because of the attorney fees.
You got it, and that's a true story.
Oh, I know.
$0.04.
You know, that's the least amount I've heard of. The one before
that was...
Well,
that's probably a record, and we use that example very openly sometimes when we get into debates with attorneys. And with all due respect to the law firms and the attorneys that are into this business, let me just give you one positive note. They are necessary, because a lot of times the only way they're able to, you know, square these deals up is with the law firm stepping in. But the problem is just the amount of money that is spent. A lot of times what we're thinking is this stuff should be squared away amicably among the members the unit owners, when hopefully with some type of grace periods at times, or more importantly, the warning system before going to the attorney's fees. And again, I'll say, Shu, that a lot of times these attorney's fees are even twice as much as the fines that are levied against these individuals.
Well, I've got a letter here from somebody in Pembroke Pines, Florida.
We were just in that area.
You were just in that area. Mm-hmm. 73-year-old lady from Cuba, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't speak English. Read or write English. And her house was foreclosed. Now, see, part of the problem with what happened to her is, and I've heard this repeatedly, is the homeowner can never get out of it because the amount due seems to shift with the hour of the day.
That is correct at times. And again, on the foreclosure issue, let me just touch base with you on that. The foreclosure issue, as you know, if it's your primary residence,
mm-hmm.
and you got homestead exemption and so forth on the unit, as you know, they really cannot take your home from you.
Tell that to George Andres, right?
I know it, but here's the thing. A lot of people are living in these units, and their primary resident may be somewhere else, or they may have a second property, and now that property that they're living in, which may be legitimately their year-round home, if it's not the primary residence, as far as the IRS is concerned, and the legal, you know, the issues on it, it's not your actual homestead-accepted home and so forth. What happens is, yes, they can come after and foreclose on this particular property. And this is one of the horror stories that we're hearing, because, as you know, the state of Florida is a state where we have a lot of people that retire from other states because of the weather down here.
Mm-hmm.
And they move to Florida. They come here to pursue the dream. They don't want a single-family home, or maybe they want to live in an area where there's common grounds and everything's maintained for them. They don't want to do yard work. They just want to enjoy their life and just have a nice roof over their head and not worry about anything else. Well, as a result of that, that may not, again, be their primary resident, and a lot of times they end up with something foolish as little as that, you know, there may be paint chipping on a wall or whatever it may be, something minor, and here comes this, you know, fine. It may be forgot, it may not be taken care of, they may be somewhere else, these are people that travel, or they may be in a second home, and the foreclosure proceedings begin. When they come back, by the time they get notice of what's happening, now they're tied up with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of legal fees, possibly a proceeding already in place as far as the foreclosure, and you can take it from there. The nightmare begins.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you're doing this, because I don't know what to say. I don't think associations should be allowed to foreclose. I think that that's absolutely barbaric.
Well, what's happened is, let's talk about why associations were created. They were created because people felt that they would be better handled among themselves if people in their own community looked out for themselves. And it's become, that was the intent, but it's just not happened. It's what's happened is the temptation has come into play. People have seen ways to make money from this thing here. And unfortunately, the integrity and the honesty sometimes falls right out of those boards, and that's where the problems begin. And let me go ahead and throw in this little comment again. I'm not talking about all associations. every few minutes, I must put that disclaimer out there.
There's one out there.
We do get
that's
calls
okay.
that we're making it out to be that, you know, that we're insulting every volunteer. For those that are listening, and they have model homeowner associations and condo associations, you know what? I thank you because you make my job easier. But unfortunately, the majority are not like that. So forgive me if I keep jumping in with that disclaimer because we do tend to offend a lot of people.
I am a former board member. I have been on the board. I can tell you it was my experience on the board that convinced me that these things are no good. You do not offend me by saying board members are bad. I was in a no-win situation. I don't believe in sticking my nose in other people's business, and yet I had the little Hitlers, basically, the Martinets, who were knocking on my door saying, did you know so-and-so did such-and-such, and it's your job to tell them how to behave.
And that's another thing that's happening, too. They become little countries within a community with their own set of laws, and that's what we keep using as an analogy. They become their own little country with their own laws, and a lot of times that power sometimes even gets into personality conflicts among people when they don't like each other. Little cliques are formed in these communities. And unfortunately, in a perfect world, sure, we wouldn't have these problems, but we don't live in a perfect world. We tend to have days where we may get into it with one of our neighbors. And again, the almighty dollar, which really a lot of times creates temptation, especially nowadays with the multi-million dollar condominium units that are going up throughout the state of Florida, and you're not paying $100 or $200 in maintenance fees and in any type of fees, you may be paying $800, $900, $1,000 a month.
That's right.
That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of temptation. And the repair, you know, bills there are not $200 or $300. They can be $5,000 to $10,000 at a time, creating, again, temptation. And remember, my job is to look at the worst case scenario. That's why whoever's listening is probably saying, boy, this is horrible, everything this representative is speaking about. My job is to paint the worst case scenario because I don't want to change laws on a best case scenario. We want to make sure that we deal with the worst case scenario so that we protect the unit owners.
So you're basically protecting your constituents.
That is what I was put in office to do.
Thank you.
And that is our job. And the day that your representatives do not do this for you, you need to vote them out of office. That is simple as that. And I'd love to be able to tell you that this is the greatest thing I've ever taken on. It really is not. This will be tough on us. We will have special interests lobbying against us in Tallahassee, trying to stop any piece of legislation that may create a loss of revenue for any of the other interested parties, as I call them, special interests. And the people that will not be up here because they can't afford to be up here and they have lives to live is the constituent,
the
everyday homeowner
that's
not up here to defend himself, and that is my job. That is my job. As unpopular as it may be to take on these issues, I am their voice up here, and we will not stop. And I tell you, it's just very sad, again, that this thing has been put aside because of political reasons for years and years and years.
Well, I thank you. When we were talking off the air a while ago, I made some comment about other states have tried to do this, and special interests and a lot of proposed good legislation has been killed in committee.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that you're going to win this one. You want to get
into
that?
Let me tell you
why
we feel we can win it. And by the way, I want to tell you, you're absolutely right. I get emails from the AHRC group, out in California.
Yeah.
I get emails from a group out in Nevada, a group out in Arizona.
Yeah.
And they're looking at us.
Yeah.
Because they're hoping
yeah.
that what they're not doing in their states because of the politics of not wanting to touch this hot potato or opening Pandora's box, they're hoping we will be successful in the state of Florida so they can model whatever legislation we put into play, and hopefully somebody will step up in their state and sponsor the same legislation. Here's why we think we're going to be successful. We have a Republican majority membership in the Florida House of Representatives and in the Senate, and a Republican governor. In the past, there have been a lot of legislators, both Republicans and Democrats, but mostly the Democrats that have tried to deal with this issue for a number of years. And I hate to say this, but due to the politics of parties and so forth, a lot of times these bills never went anywhere, or they never picked up the steam that it really needed to have. And then you also had to have, you know, your top-notch legislators, your most vocal ones, your most respected members, out on the forefront on these issues. Well, we have that in place. I am on the Republican side. I am on the majority side. And I have gone out and chosen, which is, this may sound strange, a very nonpartisan group. I have both Democrats and Republicans on my committee, this select committee that is investigating this. And these are people, both Democrats that have worked for it or worked on the issue for years, Republicans that have worked on it for years, but now it's being pushed by a Republican majority, which is myself as chairman and the people of the leadership teams in the Florida House of Representatives. More importantly, this committee, when we chose the members, this committee was composed of probably the finest, most respected legislators in the Florida House of Representatives, who are the ones who basically are in the mainstream of any large piece of legislation that comes out of the state of Florida. And again, why? Because with 40% of people possibly living in these type of environments 10 years from now, this is no small potatoes anymore. This is just as important as health care. This is just as important as education. We're talking about the roof over people's heads, and this is why it's become a big priority. Why we feel will be addressed? Well, I personally have my bill slots open, and I have an open slot right now waiting so that in December, when we have taken all the testimony and have received a number of pages of problems, complaints, and possible solutions, I will sit in Tallahassee drafted, and I will personally file it as a Republican coming from this particular committee, the new bills that hopefully will become law as early quarter of 2004. And that's a lot to be proud of. And I'm going to be very honest. We don't anticipate changing, you know, 20 or 30 things in any one given shot. You know, this will be what I call it a piecemeal type bill. We'll probably take on four or five of the largest issues, address them, and the bill will probably be amended come the following year and so forth as we continue to tweak these laws to make sure that, again, the accountability and the and more importantly, the accountability for the unit owners are in place. That's a little bit of why we feel that we're going to be successful in 2004 getting this legislation out.
Let me ask you something. How much or how little or will it affect you anyway having a high-profile case like George Andress? Is that going to help you with your, you know, with pushing legislation through?
Absolutely. And let me tell you what happens. With anything that's high-profile, the greatest thing about it, and I hope your listeners are listening closely to this, comes the public input.
Yeah.
Public input. When this legislation comes out of bill drafting,
yeah.
and now it's a bill, and now it's getting ready to be heard, this is when people need to do what they should do to help us, and that's get all those emails and fire them off to the senators, the representatives, the governor. And let me tell you, I have seen some email campaigns started up here where we receive 800 to 1,000 emails a day on any particular issue. I would expect nothing less than that from the owners, and again, the owners, the property owners, the condo owners, the homeowners in these particular associations, you know, sending these emails to your governors, I mean to the governor, to the representatives, to the senators, asking for support on the bill. That basically gives them that voice, as I said, that they don't have up here. We are their voices. But thanks to the emails, thanks to the faxes, and pick up the phone and make calls and say, I'm telling him, we need your vote on this. You need to help us out. And let them know that you're their constituents, that you're from their areas, and you're having these problems. We'll make this a much easier task. That's why it needs to be high profile. When it's low profile, the people that normally are successful at shutting down legislation are the special interest groups that are represented by lobbyists up here, which have something that they're to do to make from this whole thing, and they will be here doing what they can, and the constituents will not be helping out doing their part.
Would it help to have, I mean, the world is shrinking, right?
They claim.
And the world is getting smaller and smaller, and so would it help to get emails from people who don't live in Florida?
Absolutely.
So the, basically we, send it in.
Let me just tell you, we just had a big case down here with Terry Schiavo, the young woman and that was attached to the feeding tubes, and we had emails that came in from overseas, I'm going to tell you, just all over the world, all over the world. And they make an impact because when, as representatives and senators, we turn on in the morning our computers and all of a sudden it tells you you've got 1,400 emails. And you start skimming through there and your staff starts going through these emails and you find out it's about one particular issue, you betcha. Especially when we're looking at addresses and they're coming from around the world. And in this case, as I told you, there's other states that are counting on us that to do the right thing in order for them to come on board and follow.
We're all pulling for you, and I want to thank you very much for doing what you're doing, and I wish you all the luck. We've got a few minutes before before we have to hang up here, but what one story affected you most? I mean, you've been going around the state and listening to a lot of testimony and hearing from your constituents. And obviously you're very moved by this because it's affected you. And and is there one particular story that affected you more than any others?
Or? I'll share two quick ones with you.
All right.
One quick one is I'm an animal lover. I'm a dog lover, and I've always had a pet. And we had one woman who lived with her husband, and they had a little poodle. The husband passed away, and for years the only companion that this woman has had is her dog. They had an association meeting from 1 month to the next, changed the laws on this woman that she could no longer have a pet. They didn't even try to grandfather those who had them and was given notice and told, get the animal out or move. They started with liens and the fines and everything that came through, got to the point where she owes close to $100,000 now.
Whoa.
And she's hanging in here, and all she's trying to do is to keep her pet. And the second case scenario that
it's
really
terrible.
Breaks my heart is a woman, an elderly woman and her husband who are on set income here. They tried to fly a flag in their community, an American flag.
Yeah.
I think you probably heard about that one.
Yeah.
That one made national news. And they came after him because he wanted to have the American flag proudly flying. He was a veteran, and that association felt they did not like the flag. They came after him. The monies that he owes are in the thousands and thousands of dollars. And unfortunately, you know, this man has been made to the point where he's been belittled at doing what he felt was right and what I think we all feel is right is to be proud of our flag. And they came after him over something like that. Those are two horror stories that are just unbelievable. And again, with the other thing is how many people are being pushed out of these homes, the American dream, because of the wars and the problems within the associations.
Well, you're talking about George Andrus, and George has been on a number of times, as has been his attorney, Barry Silver. They're not the only ones. I mean, George is not the only one who's not allowed to fly a flag.
That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. And, you know, in this day and age, if we live in a country where we cannot display our flag properly because it becomes an issue, that's a sad state of affairs.
I agree with you. Will you come back when you've got your bills written up?
Well, what I'd love to do is before I leave, is leave an email.
Yes, please
do. If I could, for those
yes.
who would like to send me emails.
Great.
And more importantly, yes, when I have my bill basically out of bill drafting. I'd like to share it with you and let everybody listening know what to know what's going on.
Okay.
My email address is Robina, which is spelled R-O-B as in Bob, A-I-N-A, dot Julio, spelled J-U-L-I-O, at myfloridahouse.com. And that's all one word, myfloridahouse.com.
Okay, that's Robina.Julio at myfloridahouse.com.
I'd love to hear any complaints, problems, situations, and more importantly, if anybody's got any ideas for possible solutions, you never know. Maybe one of your ideas will be incorporated in up-and-coming legislation.
I feel like coming down and touching you to make sure you're real.
Well, I get told that a lot these days because I know it's a strange thing that you're hearing here, but that's what you call a grassroots elected official being in Tallahassee at the Capitol.
Anytime you want to come up, anytime you run for public office nationally, you've got my vote.
Thank you, Sue. But remember, at the end of the day, I'm not here campaigning. I just want to do what's right.
I'm not campaigning either. I'm just telling you, you sound like a real decent
legislator. Thank you. I appreciate
legislator.
That. My parents would be proud to hear that.
Well, please tell them we're proud of you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to having you back, and good luck.
Thank you.
Don't let the special interests get you down.
They will not get to us.
They will not get to us. You get them. And don't stay tuned because...